Well, a big thanks to Tara Walsh for the Bank Holiday Afternoon Entertainment. It is Monday, May 5th, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And we have a busy hour between now and the new music show at 7pm in Gaelic Games. Austin O'Malley reflects on the Connacht and Munster football finals, while Niall Moran reviews Limerick's Munster Hurling Championship victory against Waterford. And in rugby, Michael Cochrane picks apart Leinster's failings as the Saints come marching on to face Bordeaux in a Champions Cup final.
Paul Corrie is here to keep us up to date with all the ongoing League of Ireland matches, where I can tell you it's all square between Drogheda and Cork. Galway lead Bowes 1-0 and Waterford lead the champion Shelburne by Dundonnell and Talca Park. And of course, we'll debate our weekend sporting highlights,
which could include Shell's not being in the top half of the SSS Airtricity Premier League table. If you want to have your say, you can text on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, Ruby.
Things are flying in Talca Park, Shane, are they?
It's been an interesting 45 minutes. Yeah, Waterford currently leading with a goal to nil. Podge Almond with a header from a set piece, one that Shelburne goalkeeper Conor Cairns won't want to reflect on too much, I don't think. Shelburne have had a couple of chances, two excellent saves from Waterford keeper Steve McMullen. Shelburne have made two changes after half an hour, so that might tell the story of the first half, Ruby, in that regard. And Galway leading Bowes 1-0 as well. We will round up all of this evening's action and keep you updated. Go to our weekend sporting highlights, as you alluded to, Ruby, with Austin and Paul, who are in studio. Gents, how are you first before we cross the Drogheda United, Paul? Keeping well?
Yeah, very well, very well. I met Shane and the gents before the show, Ruby, and if you didn't know Shells were playing, you would certainly know what the score was as he looked at himself in the mirror.
Austin, keep well.
I met Shane actually in the corridor.
I met Shane on Friday night, yeah, coming down from Derry. Yeah. After.
It's a busy man, is that Shane? No, great. All good, all good. Yeah, enjoying the sunshine, and we've had a pretty decent weekend of sport. So, yeah, all good.
Lots to reflect.
Could you imagine, though, just before we go any further, if your whole bank holiday weekend had revolved around having a ticket for the final session in the Crucible tonight? It could be the worst ticket in sport.
I think it would be.
It's like day five of a test match at the cricket, when you just know it's going to be wrapped up.
17-8, Zhao Ying Tong leads by one more frame is all he has to beat Matt Williams, is it?
And it's done.
Yeah. But to be fair, you're there to witness history. First Asian champion, first China's first world snooker champion.
So you get 9 minutes for your priceless ticket.
to say you were there, Ruby, to say you were there. And you need to revel in the Crucible while it's still with us, in case it does go in, what, 2027, after the 50th anniversary. Who knows where the World Snooker Championship might end up. From one iconic venue to another, Sullivan and Lamparth give its official title. Sean Perry is watching Drogheda United against Cork City for us. All square at half-time. How has the first 45 minutes played out, Sean?
Well, indeed, Shane, it's a goal apiece here at halftime. The second half will recommence in just a matter of seconds, but the home side pulled level on 40 minutes as a result of a wickedly deflected Shane Farrell free kick. The visitors, Cork City, scored on their first meaningful attack on only 7 minutes. The home defence looked to have dealt with an innocuous cross, but rangy attacker Gennaro Daniels sensed a half chance and poked home his first ever league goal for the Leasiders. It's only the Dutchman's fourth start for City, having been a free agent after a recent stint in the Icelandic Football League. Well, it's a football match that saw Drogheda United, of course, relinquishing their hold on top of the table after Friday night's draw with Sligo, but it has still been an exceptional start to the season for the reigning cup champions. Cork City, meanwhile, are on a three-match unbeaten run, including that noteworthy draw with Shamrock Rovers on Friday last. Tim Clancy returns to the club, which he managed with some degree of success just 4 years ago, to add a further little bit of spice. Himself and Kevin Doherty having a friendly exchange before kickoff. They spoke again at half time. Will they be speaking on the full-time whistle? That remains to be seen. Clancy remains without the services of key strikers Shawnee Maguire and Rory Keating. Meanwhile, Kevin Doherty has changed no fewer than six of his starting 11 from the trip to the northwest, with injury accounting for four of those switches in personnel. Douglas James Taylor and joint top scorer Warren Davis lead the line up front, but ironically it fell to midfielder Shane Farrell to get their only goal to restore parity. Second half, just a minute old, and it stands on 46 minutes. Drogheda United 1, Cork City 1.
Great stuff, Sean Perry. Will keep us up to date with all the happenings in Sullivan and Lamb Park there throughout the course of the evening between now and 7 o'clock. Ruby did mention Zhao Xingtong is one frame away from being crowned China's first world snooker champion after their dominant third session of his final against Mark Williams at the Crucible. Zhao will resume this evening with a 17-8 lead over the veteran Welshman in their best of 35 showdown, having won 6 of this afternoon's 8 frames. Elsewhere today, former Cork City boss and Republic of Ireland women's assistant coach Colin Healy has been appointed as manager of Kerry FC. The 45-year-old succeeds Conor McCarthy at the helm of the Tralee-based side, who are 9th in the SSC Electricity Men's First Division after last Friday's 1-0 win at UCD, with Kerry FC CEO Billy Dennehy saying that Healy's appointment as first team manager marks a significant step in our short history. McCarthy will remain at the club as part of Healy's coaching staff, the 26-year-old having become the youngest League of Ireland manager when he was appointed ahead of the 2024 season. Healy's first match in charge at Kerry will be this Friday's home fixture against Treaty United at Mount Hawk Park. Elsewhere, a bit of racing news. Actually, the Betfred Derby will become a 72-hour declaration race in 2025 for the first time in its 245-year history. The Jockey Club has announced an historic move. The world's most famous flat race, which was first staged in 1780, is the first Group 1 race held in Britain to introduce 72-hour declarations. Ruby Walsh, does this mean much?
I'm just reading the headline in the Racing Post. I know Aidan O'Brien is not overly impressed, and he reckons it makes his job a bit more difficult. 72 hours out. Possibility, Shane, I understand the theory behind it from a race course and from a promotionary point of view, but it does, in this side of the world anyway, run the risk of more non-runners. 72 hours out, with the climate we live in, like what you declare to run on 3 days before a race meeting, the ground could be completely different by race day. So it does heighten the risk for having more non-runners. And I don't believe most of it, Shane, is done to try and increase or maximise betting turnover. And 48-hour declarations hasn't proven to have a massive spike in that. So the majority of betting done on a horse race is done in actual 10 minutes before the race.
Really?
Okay. That's when the majority of money is actually bet on a race, is in the 10 minutes before it.
Wow. That's... you learn something every day.
That's a good stat.
That's a good stat. It's probably an obvious stat now, tiny avid racing fans, and I'm there amazed at this.
No, it's not. That is when 90% of the turnover on any contest is in the final 10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's round up our weekend sporting highlights and lowlights. And give Punchestown mention a successful Punchestown Festival.
Definitely, Shane. Attendance is up 15% across the week. And for me, I think Friday is the first day of the weekend, is it?
It is, yeah. We'll take that. Your weekend sporting highlights can revert back to Friday, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going with that then. And it was Friday in Punchestown, 42,000 people there. Incredible atmosphere. Obviously, Constitution Hill didn't show up, but Stateman did. But it was the vibe, the atmosphere. Obviously, the weather played a huge part in it. But like immediately after the last race, behind the stand, beside the Sky Bar could have been Ibiza, let alone a race course. And the general vibe around the race course, I was only saying it to my eldest daughter, like, you could be in the Melbourne Cup here. The vibe, the atmosphere, I think the day out everybody had, I just thought it was incredible to see it at an Irish race course. And look, I suppose if you're used to going to Croke Park or even the Aviva, 42,000 doesn't sound off the charts, but when you move something to the middle of Kildare and get 42,000 people to come, I think it was a definite plus for Punchestown.
Oh, it most certainly was. I've only been to Punchestown once or twice, actually. It's always been
probably there for oxygen or something.
No, there for, excuse you. I was there diligently, diligently reporting for RTÉ News. Excuse you on the racing.
On oxygen.
I don't like this 3-on-1 ganging up on me here. I know we're here at a bank holiday and it's a bit looser and we're having a bit of fun, but come on, lads, come on. Willie Mullins was crown champion trainer. There was more formality. Paul Townend, champion jockey. JP McManus, champion owner. Patrick Mullins, champion amateur. Champion lady amateur Jody Townend and champion conditional Tiernan Power Roach. Bet you didn't know all that.
It was a long week for Tiernan Power Roach, I'd say. He was suspended for the week and John Shinnick managed to... he was only two in front and John Shinnick managed to get one back on Friday. So I'm sure Saturday was tense watching for Tiernan Power Roach. He's had an incredible season and well done to him. So I hope next year he has as much success. But yeah, look, I suppose Willie, Paul, JP, Patrick, as you mentioned, great for Jody again. It was the end of a really good season and it was a really good week. And I think when you look back across the season as a whole, there was a lot of people had a lot of success. Gavin Cromwell, Henry de Bromhead, Gordon Elliott, but a lot of trainers. And the general vibe in horse racing is at the top is killing the rest of it. I kind of looked down through it this week and kind of thought there was a lot of people there that are taking up the mantle of chasing the top. And I thought that was good to see.
No, that's good. That's what we need, that competitiveness. Gentlemen, what caught your eye over the weekend? Austin O'Malley, what was your sporting highlight or indeed low light?
Sporting highlight, I think just from a personal one, we had within Coolidge GA, we had on Saturday evening, we had the presentation of our Ireland Club medals. So that was out in Dunleary in the Royal Marine. So it was just, a brilliant night and just to sort of, to close the circle on last year in terms of the season and that. But just brilliant to see, everybody's families come together again, the celebration. We had a brilliant address from the president of the association as well, Jarrett Burns, and that. But it was just a brilliant night and it was a highlight. Outside of that, I think... there was, I don't know if it's a highlight, but it's maybe worth highlighting. I just thought, the bravery, the Kilkenny and the Dublin Camogie girls, I thought the bravery and the courage they showed in terms of taking a stance in Blanchardstown. I know this is it's an on-running saga in Camogie where they feel they shouldn't have to wear skirts and they feel that they're a bit of an impediment, but it's obligatory that they're forced to wear them. So they obviously took a stance. They all took to the field, 30 of them in shorts, but they were... obviously sent back to the dressing rooms by the referee and said the match would have been abandoned. But I suppose just, when you talk about the spirit of any of the games, be it Camogie or the GAA Association, it's built on that. And I think it's valuable to highlight that, that they're... I was involved, obviously, with the Mayo Ladies a number of years ago, and there was something similar in the LGFA when they were trying to push for this minimum standards charter and they were forced into, and I know the sort of from a psychological perspective the impact that it is on players, but it's all right to talk about things, but to follow through and to highlight it. So I just thought fair play to them that they stuck to their guns and they did highlight it, and I think it's worth highlighting for those girls.
Austin, where would have been the backlash for them had they stood the ground and said no, we're playing in shorts?
Yeah, no, a really interesting one, Ruby, because I was thinking about it again today. Like, they took the stance, and I was just wondering if they actually did, follow through. Then that they had decided, no, we'll let the game be, abandoned, and let's see where it rolls from there. But obviously, it was probably a prudent decision in many ways because the game needed to be played, and obviously there's an impact in on fixtures and so on and that. So they've met their point, but it would probably have added a little bit more weight to it. Had they decided to lock down, or if one or two of them had decided maybe not to come out, but they've definitely brought the issue more into the mainstream and that. But it'll be very interesting to see where it goes after this.
It's not Kildare or nowhere, but there was safety in numbers. It was 30 or none.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's very hard to expect two of them to say, no, not us.
Yeah. No, just looking at it afterwards, there was the Dublin captain, Aisling Maher. She came out quite strong on social media, and she put up one or two bits which I thought were brilliant. Like, she said, in no other facet of my life does someone dictate that I have to wear something that resembles a skirt. And she goes, I love the game, but I'm sick of being forced to play in something that's uncomfortable and not... conducive to performing at your peak, which is, this is where they're coming from.
Considering, so it's admirable. Like, you obviously watch a lot of teams training. Yeah. I have never watched anybody who plays Camogie train in a skirt.
There you go. So that's, again, so when you think of that, they potentially will train in shorts, and then they're forced to play in something that's, you're not used to. Yeah, so from a health and well-being perspective as well, I think in terms of just the practicality of it, when you see it, it's definitely something that probably... I know they brought it up at Congress 2 years ago, and those two motions, I think one was, if my memory serves me correctly, one was tabled by actually Great Britain to give the choice, and the other one was by, I think, Tipperary.
There was four motions in total, that all surrounded the issue at hand, and they were all defeated. And now, as it stands... Now, we'll get into this in detail on tomorrow's show as well, just to plug that, but it won't be voted on again until 2027. So this, and it was a Leinster semi-final, so it wasn't just, say, a league match that you could just scratch off or whatever. This is the Leinster semi-final, had massive bearings on the provincial championship, of course, and now won't be until 2027 where players can... Now, if there's across the board, if players do kind of change that, then it might be sped up. But that's as it stands, and the Camogie Association have said that they're the rules, and the officials. The officials, to be fair, were probably in a tough place because they had to implement
100%
that they had. And but as Ruby said, if they had to follow through.
Yeah, it's a big one, and I know they have a new president that came in as
Brian Malloy.
He's the first male in the history of to sit on that. So it's one that we'll just have to monitor closely and see if there will be something maybe in terms of action or they try and speed that up. But definitely worth highlighting.
Can't be hurdle 2027. That is the best yet.
That
is, Paul Curry, what was your weekend sporting highlight, low light, or somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I guess I can call this a highlight because I wouldn't consider myself a diehard Leinster fan, but I thought the game between Leinster and Northampton Saints was absolutely brilliant. It had a bit of everything in it, from sin bins to moments of individual brilliance to mistakes, and you surround that with the story around Jordy Barrett not starting and coming off the bench. There was just so much to it, and I thought as a spectacle it was just a brilliant, brilliant watch. From a Northampton perspective, Finn Smith, Henry Pollock, two incredible individuals. Like I couldn't believe when I was looking at Henry Pollock, who's only recently turned 20 years of age, and the moments that he had when he went past Prendergast and went over the line. It was a brilliant watch, and I think it was just such a surprise, Ruby, because we've seen how dominant Leinster have been in the previous rounds when they wiped Harlequins, wiped Glasgow. You look at Northampton Saints' form in the Premiership, they're seventh in that league. They're not showing anywhere near the same sort of power that they had last year. And to come to Dublin, to come against Leinster and overturn them was just such a huge performance from them. And it does leave a lot of questions. I'm sure you'll get into this with Corky around Leinster, the mental ability to get over the line. And particularly then you think back with the national team, we seem to have hurdles that we don't seem to be able to get over. A lot of that Leinster team are involved with the national side as well. But as a game, and as you know, just being able to watch it as a neutral, I thought it was a fantastic watch.
Austin, from a professional point of view, would you like the challenge of dealing with the Leinster players this week?
Yeah, look, there'll be a lot in it. There's certainly an awful lot to unpack after that from a psychological perspective, in terms of when you have to drill into it and find what are the barriers there. It has become something now, and there's a narrative kind of being spun around it that they just don't have the mentality to get over the line in this competition. And I suppose I was really surprised on Saturday now, just probably given what they had done coming into it and the form they're in now. I know the opposition that they had put big numbers on wasn't maybe to the quality, but I really did expect them to deliver this year, and again some of the old failings. So there'll be a lot to unpack in terms of, you know, individually where players' heads were in terms of the faith and the belief that they have in what they're setting out to do. And then just, I think, from a backroom perspective in terms of what's happening there, the way things are being framed or set up to try and maybe, you know, help players break that duct and get across the line. There's a lot in it, and I'm sure they will have a big body of work on their hands over the next number of weeks.
Oh, just watching Waterford hit the crossbar here, the sweat dripping off Shane Dawson's forehead.
You can nearly tell by his facial expression.
The bit
of life we had put into him, lads, is just all drained
away.
Out.
I thought it was something I said. I was expecting him to say cut.
No, to be fair, also, it's a very valid point. Let us continue our rugby conversation after we take a short ad break, and
we'll compose yourself.
Lots more to come on Game On. We'll be getting into the provincial finals in detail, not more on Limerick's win over Waterford. But up next, Michael Corcoran will continue the post-mortem on Leinster's Champions Cup semi-final defeat. And we'll hear from Leinster senior coach Jacqueline Aber, who Corky was speaking to earlier today, as we move the story on a little bit. Lots to come here on Game On. Stick with us.
Game On Rugby.
Now, before we get into our rugby chat with Michael Corcoran, just to update you with the ongoing League of Ireland, it is still Drogheda United 1, Cork City 1, Waterford still lead champion Shelburne by a goal to nil, as Waterford nearly make it 2-0. Good save from Conor Kearns. And Bows have just equalised against Galway United, so it is 1-1 in Eamon DC Park in that one. And I'm told that Drogheda have just taken the lead, actually, just as I speak. Sean Perry can update us.
Their joint top scorer, Warren Davis, volleying beautifully to the Cork City net from close range. An incisive run down the wing. It was squared with great effect. Owen Lamb doing the donkey work, and Warren Davis getting on the end of it. A really fine goal. They'd come close in the second half. A shot from Davis curling wide at the far post. Carlos Sullivan, the 18-year-old who's setting the League of Ireland alight, and indeed informed sources on Lee side would say he's unlikely to be with the club next summer, such is the level of interest in him. He did have the ball in the Drogheda net, but was somewhat offside. I could have no argument with the decision, but the Wales side, who are positioned second in the table against the side who are positioned second from bottom, and Drogheda having fallen behind in the 7th minute, equalising just before half time through Shane Farrell, have now hit the front on 62 minutes. It's Drogheda United 2, Cork City 1.
Well, from Drogheda United on the ascendancy to a team in Leinster, which is Leinster, that can't quite reach the summit. Michael Corcoran, I didn't see Saturday's result coming, did you?
Ruby, I didn't. I'm not sure anybody did. And anybody who says they did is kind of bending the truth a little bit, to be perfectly fair about it. I spoke to Phil Dowson, the Northampton director of rugby, after the match, and I said to him that I didn't, you know, he kind of agreed that nobody outside their own players' bubble believed that Northampton had a chance, really, of winning the game, given the fact that the way the season's gone from a Leinster point of view. And if you look at it from a kind of logical point of view, I think the Leinster squad this year is better than the one last year. You throw in Jordy Barrett, throw in Rabbi Slimani, RG Snaiman as well. I thought they had a really good bench. And I didn't think that Northampton were as good as they were. Courtney Laws wasn't with them this year, and they were down a couple of others. Ollie Slighton missing amongst the backs as well. And I thought that Leinster bench would be too strong for them. But the problem is, from a Leinster point of view, is the tries that they conceded just before half time, from you know, the couple of minutes in the run into to half time there, it absolutely blew a hole, and blew a hole in them, and they found it very hard to get back into it. Now, in fairness to them, they did get back into it, but I think the damage was done. There was a bit of a bizarre end to the game, but unfortunately, Leinster had chances to win it at the end. They just couldn't take them. So it certainly caught a lot of people by surprise. My phone's been hopping all day with people pretending that I'm a sort of sub-licensee for Ticketmaster, wondering if I know anybody who's looking for tickets, because I want to get rid of them. I said if I had my way, I'd still go to Cardiff, actually, because I think it's going to be a great final.
It most certainly will be a good final. Obviously, Leinster brought in new coaching staff, new structures, and a lot of it was around defence. Is it worrying that that's ultimately what came back to haunt them?
Well, it would be a worry because, you know, I mean, they haven't conceded 5 tries in a match. They haven't conceded a big score like this, I think, since 2016. I read somewhere the highest number of points that they've conceded since 2016, 51 against Wasps on that occasion. Their defence was picked apart, really. The number of missed tackles they had in the game was quite high, which is unusual for them. They only had to make 98 tackles during the game, but they missed 36 tackles, which is a huge amount for them. So it meant that Northampton had done their homework. Phil Dowson, again, during the course of last week, was talking about the fact that you know, they had the game to unlock that Leinster defence. I think few believed him. That's the reality about it. I thought it was just maybe an English coach talking up his team, basically, to be fair. But when, you know, the manner in which they scored even the very first try after a couple of minutes of the game, Tommy Freeman with the first one after 8 minutes, it was quite alarming, actually, to be fair about it. And I think their Leinster day was best summed up in terms of their defence. That try by Henry Pollock was sensational from his own half of the pitch. And he skinned Sam Prendergast alive on the outside to score. I mean, that was a really, really classy try, to be fair about it. And just from a defence point of view, you would be worried, given the fact that Leinster had really good form coming into the game and had nilled, you know, the previous two teams that played, Harlequins and Glasgow, in this competition. But the fact that they conceded. I mean, Ruby, if you had said to me, or if we had been talking last week, and I said that Leinster would score 5 tries and 34 points, you would have said, oh, geez, that's fantastic, fair play to them. You know, how much did they win by? They scored 34 points, 5 tries, but they lost, and they lost by 3 points, and they lost to a team who just picked them apart and unlocked the defence, which was disappointing from a Leinster point of view. Certainly worrying, yes, but I'll make a bold prediction now. I think Leinster will go through the rest of the season without losing a game. They've been stung by this, and I think this defeat will hurt them badly, and I think that they will very well close up the rest of the season in terms of the URC. I can't see them being beaten for the rest of the season. I think they'll finish the season. I thought they were going to win the double. That's the reality about it. But I think they'll win the URC. But certainly that there's a lot for them to pick apart in terms of last Saturday. I suppose one of the fallouts of last Saturday is the news that we got in the earlier part of the afternoon with Caelan Doris. He has to go for, it looks like he's going to have an operation on the shoulder. The extent of it, we're not sure yet. He's going to go for further assessment during the course of this week. Now, the British and Irish Lions Tour squad has been announced on next Thursday, the 8th in London. He would certainly have been in the frame, along with Mauro Itoje, to be the captain for that tour. But I think that tour is in big jeopardy now, given the fact that he will require surgery. I did speak to the senior coach, Jacques Nienaber, this afternoon on that very subject.
Yeah, no, definitely for us it's bad news. We don't know the extent of it yet, so fingers crossed. I know he's been to the specialist, and I think there's some more examinations in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed that it's maybe not that bad, but we probably have the full extent of what the seriousness of the injury is maybe a little bit later in the week. But yes, he's a tough man and a great captain, obviously. And for me, Caelan is not the type of guy that comes off in a game. So in my limited experience with him, if he do come off in a game, I think it's pretty serious. So that's just a subjective opinion from us.
Recovery is something where everybody has to be patient, and certainly his patience will be tested irrespective of whether it's something minor or whether it's something major.
So it depends on the severity of it, you know. So some shoulder injuries, when it's just physically a clean out and there's not massive damage on the inside, I mean, their return can be anything between 4 and 8 weeks, which is a 2-month period. But if it's extended damage and multiple structures, I mean, that can blow out to 4 to 6 months.
You've had a chance, or I assume you've had a chance, to kind of reflect on the game. It's barely 48 hours ago. Have you had any kind of mature thoughts on the aftermath of the game and the aftermath and how it went? Obviously, the result is something that you weren't planning for.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yes, I would say if the first word that jumps to mind, looking back at the game, is just painful. You know, it's just incredibly painful. I mean, obviously, it's not what we wanted, and there was a lot of effort that everybody and a lot of sacrifices everybody made. So it hurts like hell, if I can put it like that. But obviously, one has to look forward. And for me, I think there's a lot of things that we could have done better as a team. But I don't want to say it in that way, because that almost takes away how good Northampton were. And I thought the Saints were really good. They were on it, without taking anything away from their performance. There was obviously a lot of things that we could have done much better. And I think that's probably what came out today in the review. The Saints were, as I said again, no disrespect or taking anything away about the level of their performance, but definitely not a performance that we would say was up to our best, unfortunately.
You're working with a very honest group of players, both and coaches as well. I would imagine immense disappointment is the nicest way that I can put it in terms of a review and where everybody stands right now a couple of days after this game.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think today's review was not brutal. What's the right English word? It was honest,
yeah.
Open and honest, and without and I think obviously, when you have a performance like that, where you feel as a group, as a team, as coaches, as players, and as the whole group, I mean, it's not just individuals, it's the whole group. We felt we were off. So obviously you have to get your finger on why that happened. And that's the question that probably hurts the most, is the walking around for 48 hours with why, how, because like I said, there was a lot of effort and sacrifice that went into the preparation of this game. So I think if you ask anybody within the building, did you see this coming? No, we didn't. We had a good week's prep and it happened. So I think, yeah, today was, like I said, it was a brutal, honest, open review. But also with, you can be brutal, you can be honest, but there must be a method in finding solutions. You know, listen, what can we do to make sure that it doesn't happen again?
Can I ask you about the end game and the last couple of minutes? It was pretty frantic, to be fair, with television match officials, big screens. It may potentially have been a penalty try. There could have been a knock-on. There might have been a try scored. It was a chaotic finish to the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think if there's a little bit of positive that you can take out of the game from our side is the fight. You know, if you think we went into halftime 27-15 down, I think. So we needed a big performance to get ourselves in a position to maybe win the game. And I felt we did that. I think it went up to, I don't know what the average actual TV time was, but it went right down to the 80th minute and maybe into the 80th minute. And so, yeah, there was a lot of things that could have happened and at the death of the game. And, yeah, like you said, it was frantic. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that the referees would have had to check and made a decision on, which they did. And then at the end of the game, we came up short, unfortunately. The thing that probably eats us up the most as a group is the disappointment of our supporters. I mean, we can handle the disappointment because you're actually in the game, you're part of it, you were part of the preparation. So you actually feel you could have impacted, or you had the opportunity to impact it. The supporter can just support. They can't impact it. They can just give everything they have, which is supporting with everything they have, which they did. And the disappointing part for us is probably feeling we're letting them down. You know, that's the part that when I say it hurts, that hurts probably the most.
I was impressed with some of the comments that Leo made afterwards when he spoke about, you know, Northampton losing a semi-final last year and how they reacted and how they finished out their domestic season. Have you spoken about that from a Leinster point of view, given the fact of where you are right now and given the fact that you're into league action with Zebre and Glasgow to come in the two regular games that are left?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of sport. You know, sport is brutal when you come to knockouts. I mean, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. Unfortunately, this weekend, we were the loser. But the beauty of where we are currently is that we have another opportunity. And like you rightly say, that other opportunity is in the URC this weekend against Zebre. And then Glasgow, and we will have a week off, which we prefer, probably would have preferred not to have off, but it is, be it as it may, we won't be playing a game. And then I think we've already qualified for a knockout game, so we will definitely have three more games. And if we take care of our business, there might be more to come. So that's the exciting part. I mean, as disappointing it is not to get over the line yet again in Europe and coming up short, having to claw back into the game, being, what is that, 12 points down, then having to claw back to get into the game and lose it by three. I mean, we have to put that behind us, unfortunately. As much as people probably don't want to hear that, we have to put it behind us because the reality is it's done. I mean, nothing that we can do can get that water under the bridge. The only thing we can control is the training session we had today and how we pitch up tomorrow, and the training session we have tomorrow, how we pitch up for Zebre, and how we get ourselves ready for Zebre and for the remaining of the URC. That's the only thing we can control. Unfortunately, as sad as it is and as hurtful it is, Europe is done for us for this season, unfortunately.
Very honest conversation there. Jack Nienaber speaking to Michael Corcoran earlier this afternoon. So Leinster are human after all. Plenty of learnings to take for the provincial rugby side. We're turning our attention to Gaelic games. Austin O'Malley is still with us, and Noel Moran will be joining us to chat hurling.
Game on. Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat Gaelic football, chat hurling very shortly with Noel Moore, and Austin O'Malley is with myself and Ruby. So, Kerry had a big win in Munster and Galway got over the line in Connacht against Mayo. Let us focus on Connacht and the positives before we speak about Mayo, perhaps Austin O'Malley. From a Galway point of view, what drove Galway over the line and what or who stood out most for you?
I think coming away from it, and it's the correct question to ask, I think, because when you put the fat in the fire, what stood out to me was Galway's big players had a lot more big moments in that game at crucial times, you know, and stood up and had huge impact, whereas there was less, I felt, in terms of Mayo players that stood up at different points. So for me, like for Galway, I thought even when Mayo opened really strong, Conroy stood up and countered with a couple of big, big scores. You know, really, really franked his name on the game early. And then outside of that, at different moments, you had Killian McDade, who I thought was a colossus again throughout. Keane Darcy, his aerial dominance at times. Sean Kelly nipping in for scores and that. And then I've talked about big moments. Dylan McHugh, the block, I thought, on Paul Towey. I thought that was just, you know, it was an incredibly big moment, and it was again a show of sort of defiance that Galway just weren't going to be bet, and obviously that translated into a score down the other side. So I thought, from a leadership perspective, and just Galway had more big players that stood up in those big moments, and still, with saying that, Mayo put themselves in a position that they could have potentially won that game going down into the last 10 minutes, but just because of a lack of accuracy and execution and not taking those chances and putting their foot through the ball, that's what literally killed them.
So Austin, as they move on to the All-Ireland series, do you think this win will propel Galway, stifle Mayo? Mayo will learn? What way would you see it?
There's an awful lot in it, because actually watching the game, maybe from kind of a coaching perspective, like from a neutral perspective watching the game, it was so chaotic, and it made for great watching, I think, from a neutral. But from a coaching perspective in it, you're thinking this is far kind of too open. There's a lack of, like, a lot of patterns that you'd expect to see or dominance from teams. So I think Galway have probably a lot to think about even going forward about, you know, obviously letting Mayo back into the game. Now, I know they found the scores in the end, but there was a bit of too much chaos, I would say, from a Galway perspective. From a Mayo perspective, they have to go away, and they have to look at those big moments that they didn't capitalise, and their execution. Like, if you look at the game, like from a numbers perspective, they had 16 shots from play, and they convert, you know, they missed 7. They'd only have 43% in that. Like, that's just not enough to win any game, or particularly a game of significance when you're playing the quality of opposition. Also, from a numbers perspective, kickouts, they lost 52% of their own. So these are the little things that they'll have to go after and tidy up. We've seen it in maybe some of the National League games as well, where just those moments in maybe some of the, you know, the key decision making in those final moments hurt them as well. I know they have a lot of young guys out and they are kind of building, but there's a lot to work, I think, from both. Galway, we obviously go into a really, really, you know, tough group. You know, it's arguably called the group of death. They have Dublin, Derry, the Ulster runner up, and so on. So that's a big one. Mayo, they have Cavan at home as an opener. They'll need a huge, huge performance there. Cavan will probably relish coming to Castlebar to play that. And then you've obviously Tyrone in that, and you've the winners of the Ulster as well. So there's nothing easy in those groups. Mm.
The broader picture, and there is a narrative now of people making comparisons of Leinster rugby and Mayo football. Like Eamon Sweeney wrote, excuse me, in the Indo, Mayo are forever putting themselves in winning position before screwing up with ultimate victory in sight. 8 points down at halftime, Mayo at home needed just 18 exhilarating minutes to wipe out the deficit with a strong breeze behind them. The entire fourth quarter ahead of them, the game was Mayo's to lose, so that's what they did. Kevin McStay speaking to RT Sport after the match, again about how you escaped that same old story. We'll go back and have a good think about it, where it went wrong for us. This is our third or fourth big game as a group now in the last 12 months, and we're coming out on the wrong side of them. Like, we just have this conversation time and time again, and obviously there is something there. So whatever about how they'll fare in the group stages against Tyrone, Cavan and the winners of Ulster, like the broader picture for Mayo GAA, for Kevin McStay and that group, like how would you go about trying to pick them up? I know Ruby kind of posed that question to you from the Leinster angle, but from the Mayo angle now.
Yeah, well, it's going to take an awful lot of honesty, and you'd hope that honesty is within the group. Like, I've seen a lot from them as a group. You think they're really honest, but from everybody internally, to really sit down and unpick that stuff and be brave enough to unpick it and go after it and ask the hard questions. Is there, what, you know, why are these we're putting ourselves in these positions in these moments, and trying to unearth that. But it's okay unearthing that stuff, but then to have the capacity to draw up stuff that you can implement in training to create those scenarios and go after it and try and embed it. Because you can talk all you want around these things, but you have got to find and you've got to craft situations where you actually build that in to part of your training, to be able to develop these moments and to give players confidence and belief that they can actually execute in these moments. So,
do you think this group has the capacity to do that?
I absolutely do. Like, you'd always, like, I mean, there's a lot of young guys in there, a lot of bright guys, but it'll take an awful lot of that deep self-reflection and that honesty that you ask for in a group, that you really have to hold the mirror up. And that's where I've always thought that's where the real growth comes from. and you'd hope that that would happen within the group and within the back room and so on. There's a lot of, you know, experienced people around that group that I'm sure will ask those questions and create those moments and scenarios for them.
Okay. In Munster, did Kerry need a statement Munster final win to banish any perhaps lingering doubts from the Cork match?
Yeah, it was interesting, probably even listening to one or two of them being interviewed afterwards, that they clearly, targeted this game like in terms of starting really, really strongly. And it obviously bore fruit in terms of when you've seen what they done early doors. Clifford had two goals rattled off. They were four... 4-10-7 up at the break and so on. So they've done an awful lot of damage there. But I suppose the big thing, like, you can still look into that game and, like, obviously the black card, it had an impact on it when Emmett McMahon was sent off in the 17th minute and so on. And But Kerry's ability, I thought, just were their ability to unpick Clare's defence, even though they were probably at a numerical advantage when two of those goals were scored. Just their movement and their ball speed and their interchange and the way they picked them open, like, they're in really, really good form. But look, the other side of that, I suppose, you know, if you're Jack O'Connor, if you're someone involved in Kerry, they will probably go away and look at that second half. Like, Clare outscored them 14-10, and you would ask yourself, you know, it's a, like, Clare have like 21 scores in Killarney. You'd say to yourself, I'm not sure if a Clare team has ever gone and done that in Killarney. So that's, they shipped a little bit of stuff there in that second half. So they've plenty to work on. It was, I think Jack O'Connor said afterwards, it was a performance good enough, obviously, on the day. And it's another, is it their fifth in a row in terms of Munster? So they're building nicely. And that's, like, they were obviously, they were missing the likes of Paddy Clifford as well, who I just think is in the form of his life, and he dictates so much. And they got a great opportunity. He ran the bench. I think Rory Murphy, Killian Spillane, Tig Morley, Mark O'Shea, Keith Evans, all these guys got in and got minutes as well. So, and obviously their group again, where they're heading, you know, they have what the runners up in Leinster and then Roscommon and Cork. So, you know, you'd say that they'd come through that.
Okay, great stuff. There has been a goal, actually, in the League of Ireland. There's been a goal between Drogheda United and Cork City. Sean Perry can bring us up to date.
With 4 minutes remaining, Drogheda United and Cork City are deadlocked, and it's a second for Gennaro Daniels, the Dutchman who's come from Iceland in his fourth start for Cork City, again capitalising on some chaos at the heart of the home side's defence and prodding the ball to the net past the stranded Jack Brady. Brady in for Dennison, who picked up a knock against Sligo on Friday last, but it's, I suppose, scarcely more than Cork City deserves. They've pressed manfully in the last 10 to 15 minutes, and while Drogheda have spurned a couple of chances at the other end, their goal from Warren Davis to nudge them in front in the 62nd minute was a thing of beauty. There was more than a hint of good fortune about the equaliser from Shane Farrell after Daniels had given Cork City the lead in just the 7th minute. 4 minutes of normal time remain. Drogheda United 2, Cork City 2.
Okay, great stuff, Sean Perry. Thank you. Osno Mali, we're going to have to leave the Gaelic football chat there. Thank you so much for popping into us. But we are turning our attention to hurling. Niall Moran is on the line. One game in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship last weekend, a victory for Limerick over Waterford. Niall, what will be the most pleasing aspect of the win for John Kiely?
Huge improvement in performance, and obviously the 2 points being obviously the most essential element of it. So no, there's huge positives to take, and I suppose, look, the feeling was once the team was picked on Thursday night, when you saw some of the key personnel come back, maybe the team being restructured, so the guys were probably in their best positions, and straight away with a huge improvement in performance. And I think for the group themselves, I'd say they just needed to get a performance for themselves. Obviously, they have huge standards, both individually and collectively, and I'm sure within those standards, they want to be hitting their KPIs. And I suppose the feeling was maybe that for some of them, maybe in terms of their tackle count and, you know, possessions-wise, they were probably down on where they needed to be. And I definitely think you saw a return to that. And obviously, still huge room for improvement.
Hunger, commitment and skill seemed to be Jackie Tyrrell's take on it on the Sunday game last night. But it does put Limerick going in the right direction to face Cork, doesn't it?
Definitely so. Look, obviously going down to Waterford, it's a tough place to get out of. The Vikings will tell you that. And I suppose, look, it was, do you know what I mean? Like, the crowd are really in it, and there was a great atmosphere down there, beautiful hurling surface. And like Water really presented a tough challenge, and they've lost nothing in defeat. In the same breath, Ruby, I thought they really, really played well. And when Limerick threatened to get ahead, I suppose, look, Shane O'Brien had a great goal chance, or created a great goal chance halfway through the first half. And maybe had that gone in, that might have stretched the lead out to 8 or 9 points, which would have been insurmountable. But Waterford kept on coming, and like, you'd have to credit them there. I thought Mark Fitzgerald and Tom Morrissey, they had an immense battle. And again, like, you know, Stephen Bennett was still very strong. Billy Nolan in goals again, superb. And look, it was a tough place to go to get a win. And as I said, Waterford have lost nothing in defeat. And I still think that they'll be one of the teams to come out of Munster when this settles.
Okay, well, yeah, won't be too downbeat for Peter Queeley and his Waterford. So John Kiely remarked after the win, "These guys are not even 30 years of age yet. I think some people are just maybe tired of them winning rather than the length of time that they have been playing." Does this part the narrative that there's too many miles on the clock now?
I don't think that was ever going to be the narrative. Look again, I suppose it's always an easy excuse maybe when you're not performing to the insane levels which they have had performed at over the last couple of years. And look, naturally, there'll obviously be a waning off in certain guys as you get a little bit older. But I suppose what we're probably seeing, Shane, is, and most sportsmen will tell you, like, obviously, the ability to perform at your best when it matters most is key. And look, they know how maybe how to time themselves in terms of getting to where they need to. And look, John will always, he's a smart guy. Like, you know, he'll always create the narrative that will suit what he needs to get out of it. And obviously, look, there was a call to arms. Even after that, he'd call to arms to the Limerick supporters to get up and going. And look, you look for every nugget of motivation as you move along. And I suppose for John, maybe there might have been trying to create a little bit of a siege mentality. And look, as I said, he'll definitely be pleased.
Siege mentality. There's a great picture on the RT website this afternoon, and it's Keane Lynch, Tom Morrissey and Barry Nash all tackling Mark Fitzgerald. All of those big name, I'm not going to say older, senior Limerick hurlers all stood up yesterday.
They were brilliant, yeah. And I suppose incrementally, look, a lot of them are getting stronger as it goes. But again, look, lads, it comes back, like, you know, no different to Yamal playing at Barcelona. All his best performances have come in their biggest games. And I suppose, look, that's the key to greatness. And look, we all know at some stage, do you know what I mean, it's very, very hard to, you know, to hit those standards when the pressure is coming on from all sides. And they've just been excellent at it. And look, they have huge innate faith in their ability. But I'm sure those probably would have surfaced too, like, wouldn't they? Johnny, often when we see some of the great players reflecting on their careers, even likes of Henry Shefflin, and he talks about the amount of self-doubt that he had. Yet when you're in the arena against him, he just oozes confidence and stuff. So, like, again, I'm sure some of these guys would have not had maybe self-doubt, but they would have been disappointed with their performances. And look, they're governed by numbers. Look, they're governed by numbers, they're governed by tackles, they're governed by shots, they're governed by efficiency. And I suppose when you have those metrics in front of you, do you know what I mean? It's very easy to assess your performance, because other than that, the rest of us are only shooting at the dark as to why they're not performing and coming up with weak excuses like they're miles on the clock or whatever else. But look, there's huge challenges coming, and I think maybe this weekend coming, like in both Ennis and Galway, I think we quite possibly could be looking at some of the first teams to be knocked out of the championship if the results don't go their way. And that's really exciting. And I know the language used by both Peter Queeley and John over the last week has been about positivity. And like, it's a really exciting couple of weeks ahead. And even from a Limerick standpoint, I'm kind of getting excited at the word that Declan Hannan hopefully is back in training, because, do you know what I mean, he's been one of the greatest hurlers that we've had, a generational talent. And again, some people are saying the miles are on the clock with him, but they're not. A guy of his class and ability, they're timeless, like, you know. So I suppose exciting couple of weeks ahead.
Okay, great stuff. We will be previewing this weekend's action, Clare Tip, and indeed all of the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship matches later this week. For now, Noel Moran, thank you so much for joining us here in this bank holiday evening.
Game on. Association football.
Well, Paul Corrie is still with us. We're going to chat Premier League and indeed League of Ireland. Three matches ongoing at the moment into stoppage time at Talca Park, where Waterford are still one up. Galway United, Bohemian Football Club, are level, one goal apiece, and it is level in Drogheda between Drogheda and Cork, 2-2 in that one. I know, Paul, you have been keeping an eye on the Shells match, and this could be back-to-back defeats for Shelburne in what was classified by some Shelburne supporters as a must-win if they have any title ambitions.
Yeah, story of the game really is Shell's 25 shots, 3 shots on target. Like, they've had the majority of the possession in this second half, Shane. They've pinned Waterford back for the majority of that, but they don't look like they're really capable of carving out clear-cut opportunities. They don't seem to have that sort of creative 10 that can slip balls through for the likes of Odebeku, and they don't have that blistering pace out wide. So when you don't have either of those sort of facets in your game, conceding the first goal is exactly what you do not want to do, because Waterford literally just parked on the edge of the 18-yard box and Shells have struggled to break them down. 7 minutes of added time here. I wouldn't be surprised if they nicked one, but I think the ability to create chances might be a bit of a worry for Shells fans. Mm.
Will nicking one be really important with St. Pat's coming to Talca Park on Friday night?
Yeah, I think so, because I look at St. Pat's at the moment, Ruby, and they're the team, in my eyes, who have the most potential to kind of go on a bit of a run of form and open up a bit of a gap at the top of the table, particularly with Drogheda drawing right now. If they went to Derry tonight and got a result rolling into Friday then against Shells in Talca Park with the view of getting another 3 points, you could potentially see that gap opening up. So yeah, it's really difficult league in general to call, because teams just aren't consistent. Nobody seems to be able to kind of put together 3, 4, 5, 6 good results in a row. But for me, looking at the players at Pat's disposal, particularly with Aidan Keane coming back ahead of schedule from that hamstring injury, the players they have in the final third, they're the team. If they were to win tonight, I could see them rolling into Talk on Friday with a lot of confidence.
They could go 3 points clear. Now, Shamrock Rovers play Sligo Rovers as well. A Sligo Rovers victory would take them into 23 points, Pat's 25 points. So if Rovers were to win, then it would be a 2-point advantage. But again, to have any sort of advantage in this league when it is so tight at the top is huge. So in a way, it favours them that they're playing later on this evening in Derry.
And they dropped points again in Dalymount recently, having been 1-0 ahead with only 5-6 minutes to play. Like, I actually don't even think Pats have played brilliantly this year, but I still think they're the most likely to go on that run of form. There's question marks I'd have about Shamrock Rovers, even the result in Turner's Cross on Friday night. Like,
mentality questions?
I wouldn't say mentality questions. I just don't think they're firing on all cylinders. They're conceding really sloppy goals, and Shamrock Rovers, when they're at their best, even if they're in fourth gear, fifth gear, they are going to Turner's Cross. Even if they don't play well, they get out of there with 3 points. They just don't seem to be hitting those heights in my eyes anyway, at least for now, and they're conceding a lot of goals.
Paul Curry, massive game in the Premier League tonight.
Sorry, Ruby, before we chat Premier
Shells
League...
Shells have equalised.
Shells have not equalised. I wish Shells have not equalised. However, there's a penalty in the Drogheda Cork match. Sean Perry.
Up steps Ryan Brennan. He faces Tien Troost. Brennan, this is crucial. At the side, deadlocked to 2 each. He's hit the back of the net and the stadium erupts here in Drogheda, because Ryan Brennan looks to have restored the reigning cup champions to winning ways after a couple of glitches out west to Galway United and Sligo Rovers in recent weeks. It looks as if Drogheda have the wagon back on the road, courtesy of a penalty converted by Ryan Brennan deep in stoppage time. It was that man, Thomas Alua, who was brought down in the area by Troost, the Cork City keeper, seconds ago. Brennan stepping up to convert after some treatment was administered to both players. But 5 minutes into 6 of stoppage time, and it looks as if the home side have done enough. It's Drogheda United 3, Cork City 2.
I never playing poker with you because you're unreadable. How could Drogheda United getting a penalty make you smile?
Live sport makes me smile, Ruby Walsh. It's all part. I'm a staunch professional here. I don't need to talk about Shelburne.
You look like the lad that had been dealt 3 aces there, so you did playing poker. But anyway, as I was saying, Paul Curry, big game for Nottingham Forest tonight in the Premier League. They need to win to climb back to 63 points to keep their hope of Champions League football alive.
Yeah, they don't win tonight, Ruby. I think it's curtains for Nottingham Forest. I don't think they're playing well enough to afford to drop points tonight and then roll into the last couple of games. The remaining fixtures aren't bad. After tonight, they play Leicester, West Ham, and then it could come down to the final game of the season when they play Chelsea. But you would feel as if they need to get a result at Palace tonight. One big name missing from their starting 11, that's Callum Hudson-Odoi, who has been really prominent for them going forward. Himself, Alanga and Chris Wood have been the reason, in my eyes, why they are where they are today with the goals they've scored and the contributions that they've made. But if they don't win tonight, it does feel like they're in a bit of free fall. I mean, they've lost, what, 4 of their last 5 games. Some of those results included Brentford, Everton, Aston Villa. So it's a must win tonight. And it's not going to be easy, because Crystal Palace under Glasner are playing some really good football. I really like watching them. And you think of managerial positions that might come up. I know he was linked with a move back to Germany in the summer. He has huge credentials. And you can see why with the way Palace are playing.
Some of those teams around him are heaping the pressure on. City beat Wolves 1-0. Villa beat Fulham 1-0. They're all just chipping at the results, aren't they? And Chelsea obviously got a big one against Liverpool 3-1.
Yeah, they did. And particularly with Newcastle only drawing. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Shelburne have hit the crossbar. And then Mipo Odebeku, to keep our listeners up to date with the live ongoings to talk about. John Martin, I should say, has just pulled it wide in a 6-yard box with an overhead kick in the 95th minute of 7 additional.
And Bows have just scored a 97 minute winner against Galway. Couldn't get worse for you, Shane, could it?
He's just gone downhill again. I'm playing poker with him here now. He's just fallen off the side of a cliff here.
We were talking about the Premier League, Paul Carey.
Yeah, no, as I was saying, the draw that Newcastle had with Brighton has just condensed things so much now from Man City all the way down to Aston Villa and those positions for Champions League football. Chelsea play Newcastle next. Newcastle then play Arsenal. So there's a lot of points that could be dropped between now and the end of the season. I'm going to stick with what I said previously. I think Man City and Newcastle will make those positions. I think it's now going to be between Chelsea and Villa. I veered with Villa a couple of weeks back. We're looking at Chelsea on the weekend. I know it's an understrength Liverpool side, but the fixtures aren't too bad after Newcastle. Manchester United at home and Nottingham Forest away. Mm. And I think if you go to Forest needing to win to guarantee yourself Champions League football, if you can't get over the line there, you probably don't deserve to make Champions League football. But it's really tight, really, really tight. And it really will come down, I think, until that last game of the season to see who is going to make that Champions League race.
Are you smiling at United being a handy fixture, Ruby?
It's a given three.
Yeah, it is. Particularly if Man U win during the week. I mean, if they don't go through to the final, there has to be major question marks. But they'll get through, and then Chelsea will play a very understrength. I mean, some of the goals Man U conceded on the weekend, no pressure on the ball, so easy to cut through them. And major question marks there.
Headline news in Premier League today as well. We haven't mentioned Trent Alexander-Arnold confirming his departure from Liverpool. Who knows where he might end up?
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe the worst kept secret in football.
Yeah. How will history reflect on Trent? Because I was watching the BBC live blog on the website, and there's traitor and all of this, and there's no, listen, he's developing his career like the homegrown hero, and like, how will fans see? Will it just be a 50-50 divide?
I would say so. I mean, he probably changed the outlook of the rightful position just with his contributions with goals and assists. I don't think any other fullback was playing the game in that sort of way, in the way he does, and his technical ability, even moving into the middle of the park and being able to spray balls left and right. From that perspective, he'll be remembered very fondly. But there will obviously be a cohort of Liverpool fans who will feel as if he's turned his back on Liverpool. I don't mind the decision. I think if Real Madrid come calling when you're 26 years of age, you can go on a bumper contract, you can go experience a new culture, a new football club, and the biggest football club in Europe. So I don't mind the move. But yeah, there'll be Liverpool fans who will look beyond the Champions League, the two Premier Leagues, the FA Cup, the Carling Cup. It's hard to not look as a neutral and say, you know, what a fantastic player, what a servant, and he deserves his move.
Okay, great stuff, Paul Carey. Thank you for your company this evening. Just to confirm the full-time League of Ireland scores, Drogheda United 3, Cork City 2, Galway United 1, Bohemians 2, Shelburne 0, Waterford 1. Game On is back tomorrow from 6 o'clock, but do not go anywhere because the brilliant Beto da Silva is up next with some bank holiday entertainment with the new music show. For myself, Ruby, Andrew O'Connor, producer, Laura Lee Davis, a broadcast coordinator, have a great evening. We'll chat to you again at 6 o'clock tomorrow.